Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Welcome, everyone, to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Heather Lawson Bradfield. Heather is the founder of Totem Advising Group, a minority-focused cannabis consulting firm, and the founder of Medical Advising Partners, a mobile medical marijuana clinic which focuses on bringing marijuana access to patients who otherwise can't afford or are not aware of cannabis benefits. Thanks for joining us today, Heather.
I really appreciate you having me here so much. It's great to be on the show.
No, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time so much. And let our listeners know, where are you located today?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm coming to you today from sunny Florida. So I'm located right around the central region. And we're just getting off of that nice humidity kick that we had over the summer. So I can walk outside and take a breath without breaking a sweat, thankfully.
Oh, that's the best. No three showers a day. That's the best.
No. No, I don't need that anymore. Just two.
Very good. So good. So tell me a little bit about what you're doing in Totem Advising Group or TAG.
Absolutely. So TAG, for short, Totem Advising Group, is a minority-focused business development firm. And what that means is that we really specialize in working with individuals in underserved communities that maybe haven't had the standard or more robust access to whether it's business development or getting an idea fleshed out from a prototype to an actual hands-on. And we really focus on individuals that have taken the brunt of the war on drugs and really need to see that representation in the cannabis community, from those people that have borne the brunt of it. So, like I said, we're minority focused, which is, African-Americans, Latino, Asian-Americans, veterans, LGBTQ community, really anybody that isn't, in the mainstream culture of cannabis right now.
That's so important. Talked about off air about, how this culture has become kind of toxic, with all the compliance and having to deal with everything and how, it's kind of opened the door for investors to come in, who aren't, have the people's best interest in mind, to say the least, and kind of bringing in a toxic bro culture, so to speak,
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think for me coming in, being part of the LGBTQ community, and a woman, obviously, it's important to open a door, hold a hand out, and just we do better together. And it sometimes takes multiples to have a voice, right? So individually we may not have one, but collectively we find a stronger voice. And then, of course, I think you mentioned my medical clinics, right, which is our mobile medical units. We take those into underserved communities and really just work to provide patient education access. In many cases, we do subsidized medical access, so we'll work to get event sponsors that will help us throw the event, and then we provide patients free medical cards so that they can go and try cannabis as an option, treatment option.
Incredible. Now, and obviously, this is your focus. Now, when you're looking for consulting clients, are you looking to help people who themselves are minorities, or are you also open to helping people who want to serve, underserved areas, underrepresented areas?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. So I come at it from both. Well, I actually come at it from a holistic angle. So yes, to both of those questions, we look to support both ends of it. But not only that, we also live it, breathe it, walk it, those values. So what I mean by that is not only do we look to bring in clients that want to make kind of a social justice splash, so to speak, or really look to change the playing field, but we also work with minority clients, of course, that may not have had the same opportunities. We're also cognizant about where we ourselves spend our money. So, our vendors are typically of minority groups. Our partners are, individuals that are across the spectrum. We have people that are, non-able-bodied. We have people that are, Cuban-American, African-American. It's just, the spectrum is what you get when you come and work with my group, because everybody has room to have a seat at the table, and we just hold the door open and give them the chair and then wait for the right person to show up so we get that spectrum representation.
Incredible.
So it takes, I think, two sides. People getting involved like myself on the ground levels, and then people getting pissed off enough to go out and really, you know, change the people that are in office and look to see policy changes. You know, our activists are a big part of this. Our cannabis activists are huge. You know, California has some good intentions when it comes to their social justice components of cannabis. Michigan is trying. You know, so I think it's got attention, but I think where we would see the biggest win is if we had a presidential platform as a part of cannabis reform. You know, if you made it mainstream and saying that we're going to do federal legalization, but part of the federal legalization is that there has to be, so, you know, social justice components for minority groups, that would be a massive win, in my opinion.
That's amazing. No, definitely. There's a lot more. And, you know, if we're waiting on that, we're going to be waiting a while. But I think, you know, we can start doing a lot of change here. In the short term. You know, I was just a few weeks ago in San Francisco, and I was had the pleasure and the privilege to be at a social San Francisco equity group, and it was really, really eye opening. You know, to be able to sit there in their meeting and to learn so much. What are your thoughts on those kind of movements as well?
So, I think that when we see those kinds of movements, we just need to be sure that the individuals that are involved in the movement look like the individuals that we're trying to help. There is a issue of white saviorism that permeates our culture. And so my only desire as I see these types of groups come together is that it's not led by somebody who looks like me. It's led by somebody that really understands and lives and breathes what those injustices are day to day. Otherwise, I think we really don't have a shot in hell of doing anything meaningful. We just don't.
Yeah, no, and
we're gonna
sit totally
in a room and talk
you.
And yeah, we're just gonna sit in a room and talk, and you know, you get stuck in a think tank, and then nobody actually does anything because nobody's living and breathing that life.
Yeah, no, I will say, you know, the group that I was able to sit in, you know, was led by my boy Bo Rilla. Shout out to Bo Rilla, hoping to have him on the podcast soon too. You know, he spent 40 years incarcerated because of the war on drugs and, cannabis related. And, I look around the room and there, you know, another guy who lost his brother to gang violence. And, basically the whole thing was one of the guys that was there, equity member, he was, he's starting a dispensary, but next door is like, you know, a chill room kind of thing. And his whole thing is like, you know, if I was white, all this stuff would be getting passed, no problem. But I'm having to jump through a million hoops, you know, and basically, you know, the whole purpose of the group there is, you know, just to vouch for them is, you know, they are people on the front lines, people who have been through it, and people who, you know, are able to help them, who look like them and able to help them who know the political system, the political climate a little bit better. And have relationships there in that sense. It will
Beautiful.
Help in the long run. So that was really good
yeah.
to see, because I do hear a lot
That's
of, you
excellent.
Know, yeah, you know, I hear a lot about it, you know, on both sides. And, you know, also there's the aspect of, okay, cool. So these guys are able to get the, their licenses, but then the investors come in and take advantage of them and pay them, you know, pay for that license in the end and having to, you know, they're under their watch. So there's a lot of work to be done. But, you know, I think progress for the sake of progress is better than people, you know, like you said, sitting around and having a think tank. And it's not going to be perfect. Progress is never perfect. But, you know, in the long run, I think we definitely benefit a lot from, just asking the right questions. And then, like you said, helping the right people, making sure that they feel
the bill. I actually want to kind of tail off with something you mentioned a moment ago, which is about the investors, because that's also a side of my experience in the business development world. It's really critical to understand that, especially as a minority group coming in, to never give up that 51% share of your firm. Mm-hmm. And that's where we see a lot of issues with the minority clients, because they'll have an investor, but invariably that investor is looking for a majority share. And that kind of defeats the entire purpose of getting into this industry and looking to create generational wealth and influence. Because if you're losing control of the company, you're really losing control of your destiny in the long run. And so that's one thing that I always caution my clients to, especially with working in investors. If they're not willing to give you or at least provide you the support you need to run the company in the right ways through infrastructure, never give up that majority sharehold ever.
100%. It's a whole nother world, you know, that I think people aren't really, you know, well versed in. Anybody, you know, any entrepreneur, regardless of diversity, and anybody is, you know, liable to get screwed over, you know, if you don't have somebody backing you, giving you the right kind of advice. So what you're doing, you know, everybody should hit up Heather, you know, because it's really incredible that you're giving the proper advice, you know.
The private equity world is a whole other animal. I've had some experience in that recently, and I totally appreciate people who live and exist in that world. It's great, but it's definitely something where you certainly have to have that kind of thick skin and understand what you're really getting into, because it's a shark tank, and everybody's circling around trying to find the right deal. You know, where are they going to put their money? Where are they going to make the biggest bang for their buck? And everybody's got the next big, you know, Lyft idea or Airbnb, or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's just getting that right match is so much more important than getting the money, because not all money is good money. So, and that's not something that's always easy for somebody who's just so invested in looking for their baby to take off, right? That can be heart-wrenching to really understand that you might be better served to walk away from this money.
Yeah.
But anyway, so not to derail your conversation there, I just wanted to note with my experience with the investors, just shout out to everybody listening. Always keep your majority if you can. And if you can't, then maybe reassess if it's the right person to work with.
No, 100%. And, you know, based off that as well, you know, one of my mentors taught me, you know, not only is not all good, all money good money, but, you know, you want to have smart money as well, not dumb money, you know, people who are helping you build your business, and, you know, not shark money, like you're saying, you know, people who are just in there.
Exactly.
And it's hard to navigate. So I guess, you know, how that brings me to another question. How do you really navigate in that? How, you know, is it just by case by case basis? Are there real red flags that people can watch out for as they're in
this? Yeah. I think this may not be the most popular answer, but I think that we all have a sense of when there's a red flag, right? Like, we have that intuition of understanding that, you know, okay, this is good, I want to go for this, but, you know, I've got a couple hesitations. And so my advice is always, you know, if you have any hesitations at all, you always talk about them, you know, not necessarily with the investor, of course, but at least have a conversation with somebody that you trust who has your best interests at heart and, you know, is experienced, right? They've got the business savvy to be able to provide that guidance. So whether it's somebody like myself who's a consultant, or as you mentioned, a mentor, or, you know, a cousin who has done very well for themselves or whatever, just have that conversation and never ignore those gut instincts. The other thing too is that if it's too good to be true, it is too good to be true. Always understand that, because, you know, there are very few times, if ever, that you're going to have that fairy godfather that walks in and, you know, waves a magic wand, it's the perfect investor and everything's going to go exactly how you want it. Because there's always going to be some kind of catch, in my experience. And if it's too good to be true and you can't find the catch, then always invest in legal counsel. Never move through a deal without legal counsel. So those would probably be the big three things. Listen to your gut, talk to somebody if you've got questions, and, you know, go with that legal review if you really need it.
Amazing, amazing. You know, and I try not to bring, you know, gender up too much, but, you know, it's funny you mentioned, you know, having a gut feeling, and, you know, there's something you said about women's intuition. You know, we were recently into something where, you know, we're going through a little bump in the road as well. My fiance was like, you know what? I didn't have a good feeling about that from the beginning, you know? And it's like, damn, I wish I would have known. Like, she's like, you were so excited, you know? It's like, oh man, I really wish I would have, you know, it's not her fault, obviously, you know, but, it's like they call it women's intuition for a reason, you know? It's
like, yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I call it my spidey sense, where it's just like, you know, it's like my neck tingles and I know something's not right. You know, and I've got an agreement now with my business partners and my life partner, for that matter, that you know, if I've ever got that inclination of just kind of that, huh, it's usually what it is where that thought crosses my mind and it makes me go, huh, that I'm like required to speak to it, because when I don't is usually when we end up in trouble. So yeah. Yeah. That's why one of my very first, you know, pieces of advice is listen to it. If you don't have it cultivated, then get, you know, learn to listen to it, learn to cultivate your intuition, because, you know, that authentic self, higher self always knows when you're doing the right or wrong thing. And when we ignore it is when we get in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you're a very busy woman. You know, I also want to hear about where you guys are going with medical advising partners. Changing.
Yeah, absolutely. So woman of many talents here, of course. And as such, I've got multiple firms and endeavors and projects. And the core of what I do is really about social equity, right? So it's always about trying to find, you know, ways to help the little guy. I worked in corporate America for, you know, 15 years. And I know what that's about. I know what that takes. But I just am really interested in helping, you know, my neighbor take his daughter to softball by supporting his business than I am by helping a CEO get another jet, right? So this is where I shift my talent and my investment into the community rather than into the conglomerate. And so I have a mobile medical clinic, which is fully ADA certified. You know, it's accessible, it's HIPAA compliant, you know, or PHI compliant, the whole nine yards. So it's a mobile medical clinic, and we take it to different communities that don't have strong, you know, resources for medical cannabis. Because Florida is a medical state, it just, you know, it's light years behind California. But we passed medical in 2016, 2017, and so I have this mobile clinic, which I take to communities that doesn't, you know, again, they don't have access to either physicians or doctors, or really even education about how cannabis can be a treatment option. And so I do that through a couple of different avenues and routes. One of them that I do is I look for sponsors who want to come in and work with us either for, you know, recognition or community outreach, or, you know, there's multitudes of reasons why a sponsor would want to work with us. Mm-hmm. But we do look for sponsors. And then what we do in turn is provide free medical certifications. And that removes a significant barrier of entry, being cost, for patients to get engaged into this wonderful new medicine. And so, you know, we've seen really positive response to that. And then, like I said, on the other side, we also just go out into areas that don't have, you know, a robust medical marijuana community and educate and get them signed up for cards as well.
Incredible. You know, the cannabis industry having to do with compliance, everything is hard enough. And it seems like you've taken on the next level now, having, you know, a mobile medical marijuana clinic, having to do all this. You know, how'd you break in? You know, how do you navigate in this space? And, you know, kind of who taught you the ins and outs?
I really like your questions. I have to tell you, you ask different questions than most of my other interviews. So,
hopefully I'm keeping your toes, you know?
Yeah, they're really good questions. They're really good questions. I like it. It makes me think. So, I've been in the industry kind of in like an ancillary, I call it like in the peripherals of cannabis for, probably 5 years. So, but I haven't really been out, you know, had my own firms, pushed my own product. I just did like independent consulting on the side. And then, you know, of course everybody has family who grows and you know, like it's just, I've been kind of in the industry. Mm-hmm. So I officially broke in about a year and a half ago. And really for me, it was about, you know, serendipity. Everything aligned. So I was in the right places at the right time. It really is. And that kind of goes back to that whole intuition thing, right? It's when you're in that state of flow and you're operating based on the authentic self, you usually find that you'll find your opportunities will find you rather. So that's where I was. And that was what I was doing. And so I started working with a couple of firms inside Florida because as I mentioned, my background is corporate. So I do all kinds of operational oversight. And the best thing about my skill set is that it's fully transferable. It is not industry dependent. I actually have been in everything from automobile insurance to finance to health insurance. in my career history. So I've, you know, done it all. And I decided I was tired of seeing people taken advantage of. Specifically in Florida, there's this, I mean, it's like this everywhere in cannabis, but there's somewhat of a wild, wild west feel to it.
Oh, where yeah. It comes up all the time.
In my experience, you get two extremes. You get the people that really operate with conduct and care and hold themselves to standards. And then you get the other people that are attracted to it because it's an underregulated or non-regulated industry and they can get away with anything. Uh-huh. And I unfortunately had some experiences with people like that, and it lit a fire under my ass, and I just said, I'm done. I don't want to, you know, associate my name with people who are taking advantage of other people. And I'm going to do my own thing, and I'm going to do it better. And here I am. So how do you break into the industry? How did I break into the industry? Was by sheer, I'm going to change it. You know, this is, we can do better. And I know I have the skills to do it. So I took the risk, and here I am.
That's amazing. That's the best way, obviously, you know, and
no risk, no reward, right?
That's it. And, you know, gotta go full in, and, you know, willpower sometimes, and, you know, but you have a lot of passion, you know, yeah. What you're doing, you know, and that's absolutely another thing. You know, everybody has a different why, and they have a different passion, you know, so I want to know, you know, what, you know, you bring up diversity, you bring up helping the little guy, all that, you know, what is your big passion that pushes you?
I mean, you just kind of named it. For me, it's the underdog. I'm interestingly not like a supremely competitive person. I think that we are a species, culture who has strayed from our truth, which is, you know, collaboration. And really at the core of it is just love, right? It's all about helping each other out. There's more than enough to go around. And so for me, it's I think demonstrating through my actions that we don't have to compete or step on one another to be able to do well, right? You do it by holding out your hand and then lifting up together. And when you take that approach, I mean, that's really where the magic is. That's when humanity just shines, is when we take that collaborative approach. And so, again, kind of referencing that, seeing the underbelly of the industry, gave me that momentum and that drive and that desire to say, you know, we can do better, so let's do it together.
Wow, that is so powerful. You know, I think that gets lost so quickly. You know, you mentioned the word competition, and it's like, you know, there's this whole idea that, you know, I have to get this guy in, or, you know, I have to beat that competitor and all that. And there's a whole nother model that you bring up, you know, it's just a matter of it's abundance where everybody, not only is there enough for everybody, we can actually help each other and we can actually grow this together. And it's not me against you, and it's not even us against the system, you know, which could be actually, you know, but, you know, if it is us against the system, it's better for us to be aligned, you know, and helping each other instead of, you know, trying to beat each other up along the way. That is so powerful.
Right. Absolutely. And you know, I think a lot of the reason why people don't gravitate towards that approach is because this approach does not always have that immediate, like, bang, yield, return, right? Mm. It's more of a organic, gradual, relationship-based process. And when you take that approach, it takes longer to build. But you know what happens with your sustainability? You outlast everybody. And so, you know, again, you talk about those generational changes, influences, legacies. This is where you start building it, and this is how you start doing it. One step at a time, one block at a time, one action at a time.
Yeah, we are the change. We are that change. Exactly. We're doing it one little bit at a time. So I guess, you know, what's your biggest obstacle then that you faced, you know, kind of this having this approach, you know, not just this approach for your business, and how you've been able to overcome it?
You know, I think with most businesses that start out in a new industry, unless you are somebody that's walking in with a massive capital investment, you know, it's all about being able to sustain your lifestyle while you're working to make those social changes. And so my biggest obstacle has really been myself and allowing the flow of life to lead and instead of trying to seize up and control it. So my obstacle is me and understanding that I have the strength to withstand, you know, any type of challenge that comes my way. It fortunately has not been a significant, like, you know, again, my race certainly helps me for my barrier of entry to new industries. And my credentials that I come in from corporate certainly help me move forward as well. Right. You know, so it's knowing that I can achieve what I need to achieve and getting my message out there that, you know, you can live every step of your professional life with the same integrity you do in your personal life.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, listen, the fact of the matter is that having, you know, having white skin and having, you know, a business regimen, you know, coming from a business background doesn't have to be a negative. You know, you're bringing that to everybody and bring that support, you know, that people wouldn't necessarily have perhaps.
Well, and I think it's also even just acknowledging it. Like, there's a lot of people that talk about white guilt, and it's not about a guilt component. It's about understanding that we live in a country that has racism just woven into the fabric, and we can deny it all we want, and that's okay. There's people that do. It's okay. It doesn't change the reality of what the structure is, right? I mean, we know African Americans are pigeonholed into buying houses in certain communities, which is why they're called ghettos, right? I mean, we know I don't have to run through the entire history of our complete obstructionism when it comes to equality between the races. But I think there's something to be said for acknowledging that and saying, I have this because of the default of how I was born. So let me be an intelligent creature and say I can leverage that for others. So it's not this, you know, head in the sand, self-serving, oh, I got this because, you know, I'm the most qualified person. Well, yeah, but there's also all these subliminal, you know, racial poles that we all have. And I get that and I know that. So I use it to other people's advantage, not just my own. And that, I think, is the piece that is my impetus to make sure that I can help others move forward. So I know what it does for me because my eyes are open. So let me put that to good use.
Exactly. You know, and it's so funny, you know, I brought up, you know, my fiance and her mother, you know, she's raised by a lesbian couple, you know, my future mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we get into this all the time. You know, she's a white Jewish lady. And, you know, and I'm like, you know, my mom came from Mexico, you know, when she was 12. And we kind of go back and forth. You know, I'm like, why is it, you know, a negative that you're white, you know, or why is, you know, it's like, it's not a negative that I'm white. You know, it's because this is her entire passion, her entire life is all about, you know, social justice, you know, being on the front lines, you know, protesting, helping people, you know, they're at an ICE protest and from along the way, you know, she's the third lesbian couple to be married in New Jersey and all these amazing things that she's able to do.
That's incredible.
You know, and, you know, just being able to, and she's like, no, it's not the negative. It's like you were saying, to use it, it's for your advantage to help other people. You know, and
right.
You know, and you know, so really commend you on that as well. I guess, you know, once again, changing gears a little bit, you know, what do you feel the challenges are in the industry today? And what can we do about it?
I'm gonna borrow your words from earlier, and it's the bro culture. It's the large corporate presence of cannabis, which I'm going to be really frank. It's going to consume it. We know it will. It always does. I mean, we saw it happen with the telecom industry with cell phones. Now we only have what, 3-4 options. We have like 16. It's just the way of our capitalistic world. It's fine. But I think my concern is get your piece of the pie before it gets consumed. Because it will. So I think that is my biggest concern, although I don't think it really has a solution. I think it's just simply a fact, and I'm being realistic about it. You know, we can continue to make the changes in the inflows, but unless we have some very, again, like I mentioned earlier, high-level policies that are implemented at a federal level quickly, I think it'll still, you know, end up getting consumed. So the states will come first, and then there will be a windfall globally, which is already happening now, right? I mean, we've seen three different countries legalized some sort of medical cannabis this year outside of the U.S. So the global level is, you know, if you've got any ties globally, certainly reach into them and start capitalizing on that. And I think just, again, my recommendation is get the piece of the pie now where you can and get your foothold.
Yeah. You know, it is scary. You know, I try to be, you know, optimistic with it, and it's so hard, you know, because like you said, it's so easy for big business to just come in and start consuming people. And I guess, you know, go on.
I was just going to say, I agree with you fully. And the fact of the matter is that in our country and in our world, money rules and money talks, and the cannabis industry is just waiting to be developed. And so those who have the money will be the ones who talk.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's a good point, is the talking, because, you know, I look, you know, to borrow positive things that come from Silicon Valley, I guess, is that kind of the personality has become bigger than the brand, you know, and it happens, you know, even, you know, in the music industry where Jay-Z, Dr. Dre have been able to transcend what they started off doing and be able to, you know, to be billionaires now because of the personalities that they bring and, you know, obviously the amazing business moves that they're making. But I think, you know, I think that's something that we can do is to bring these great personalities and these great stories to the forefront. You know, that there are people out there, there are, you know, young entrepreneurs who are, you know, been pigeonholed and have been affected by the war on drugs and, you know, come from, you know, a background that, you know, isn't, you know, everybody is not going to clamor to, you know, even getting into colleges. You know, you go to one school, you go to another school in different areas and you have the same grades and you see the, you know, the white kid getting in and the other kid not getting in, you know? So it's just, I think in the long run, something that we can do is to bring these personalities out. And
you know,
people love a good story and people love, you know, to see these things come to the forefront.
Right. Oh, absolutely. The storytelling component is, I mean, that's the hook, right? That's how you get people engaged into it, is by it being, you know, something that catches people's attention. So I do like to see, you know, I want to say I saw recently that Mike Tyson was starting to get involved into the cannabis industry, right? So we've got more of that mainstream crossover. So it's not like, you know, it's not like where you've got Jane West, who started off as a cannabis personality and crossover into mainstream. Mm-hmm. You've got somebody like Mike Tyson, who is an athlete in the mainstream, crossing over into cannabis. And in my opinion, when you see that crossover come from the other way, you know you're really on the edge of something. Like, we thought we'd seen momentum up until now, 2020, 2021. I mean, you're going to be lucky if you can hang on by your fingertips.
Yeah. Amazing. You know, Heather, you're doing so much good, you know, and Tag is doing so much good for the industry, for the different communities out there. You know, how do you get yourself out there? You know, you mentioned kind of this organic approach and kind of this flow approach, but how do you really get Tag out there so there's so much more awareness about you and what you guys are doing?
Well, I talk to people like you. in all reality, for me, it is all about the alignment and the organic approach. So how do I get the message out there? By consistency, by discipline, by doing what I'm doing, because I know it's the right thing. And so as I continue to do that, my momentum organically moves upward, because my actions can only cause a change, right? Like, I'm doing something different. And so with that difference comes a different response. And so as I continue to really, I think, firm up in my foothold and what drives me and my message and my vision, it really just continues to get much more crisp and people are naturally gravitate towards it. As you live closer to your truth and your authenticity, it just opens up things in life that are never otherwise possible.
So true. And it goes back to that kind of, you know, the intuition that you're talking about and that, you know, BS meter that people have. And I think we're kind of being conditioned now to, you know, have barriers and to present ourselves in a certain way. But when we're able to be authentic with each other and just be truly transparent and just, there's something that opens up where people drop their guard and we're actually able to make progress. And that's where some of the best deals are made in business, you know.
Right.
And, it doesn't have to be, you know, about, you know, the boardroom, and doesn't have to be, you know, it can be about, you know, authenticity, real people connecting and making a difference in that way.
Well, it's like the laws of attraction, right? It's what you put out is what you pull in. And mm-hmm. so when I continue to put out that alignment, that clarity on who I am and what my vision is and what I'm here to do and who I'm trying to help, that's what pulls in towards me. It's remarkable, but I live it and breathe it every day. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't have my difficult days. But it certainly allows me the space to, again, flow, because it's almost like there aren't as many failures when you're fluid. There's redirections. So it doesn't come through as, oh, I didn't accomplish this. It's, oh, it wasn't the right thing to accomplish. Right. Mm. And so when you change that headspace and you give yourself permission to say, okay, that wasn't the right thing. So this thing over here looks like, it's got good alignment. So let me examine that for a minute and see if it comes through. Right. So you're not like, you're not forcing, you're not forcing something then. And when you're not trying to force and jam something through, you allow yourself to really exist in that space that is the premium space of humanity, which is, again, alignment. It's living your truth.
100%. Well, you have such amazing vision and obviously so much aspiration. So, what can we expect from Heather, from TAG, from Medical Advising Partners in the future coming up?
So, TAG as a whole, like I said, is on a nationwide level. So we take clients in from everywhere. For TAG, it's really just continuing to identify the right kind of people that we want to work with and those individuals that are looking to either get their, get their product out there, get their idea out there. And we're there to support them. As far as Medical Advising Partners goes, for us in that regard, we really look to influence the medical community, not just in the medical states, but like our long-term vision is to really integrate into medicine as a whole. So become of a service to nursing homes and assisted living facilities and people that, can't get to their doctors easily, but want to incorporate cannabis as part of their treatment program. That's really what our vision is for the long term and what we look forward to doing, in the years to come.
Very good. And, I always have to ask every driven entrepreneur that I ever meet, how do you define success and what does success look like for you?
I think success is living, I hate to sound like a broken record. It's living your truth. It's living what you know to be right for you. And success is not something that can be societally defined. So I don't consider success to be the guy that's sitting up on the cliff, in La Jolla overlooking the ocean and $3 million mansion and, $100 million worth of cars in his garage. Is he happy? Is he fulfilled? Uh-huh. Does he have love in his life? Does he have family? Right? Is there a purpose? Those are the things that define success. And then everything else in life will flow behind that.
100%.
So I consider myself to be in a very successful place in my life right now.
That is so great, and that I'll be honest with you, that is always my barometer. And I always ask everybody, there's really, in my opinion, nothing wrong when people say, hey, when I get that yacht, or hey, when I have that exit, hey, when
sure.
whatever that is, if that's your motive, then go for it, but it's so, I always wonder what's in it in the short term, what's driving you, and like you said,
right.
are you happy? When shit gets fucked up, how are you going to keep going? When it looks
right.
like, where's that yacht? It's not here, and it's, we have to have
you
something
can't call your,
driving us.
You can't call your yacht up at night when you've had a devastating day and look for support,
yeah.
right? Like yeah. it doesn't work that way. So do you have a community? Do you have a network? Do you have an infrastructure? Do you have people that love you? Do you love people? Are you giving back? Are you trying to leave this world at a better place than you got it in? Those are all of the things that, in my opinion, define a successful human being. It's what's your imprint and what's in the mirror looking back at you at the end of the day.
Very good. Well, as we close, Heather, how can our listeners find out more about you and about TAG and about everything else that you guys are doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like we've mentioned before, Totem Advising Group is a minority-focused business development firm. We are taking on new clients, and we typically focus in the cannabis sphere, but we do have clients outside of it. I work with med spas. I work with all sorts of individuals that really just want to do more with their presence in this, and you know, in this world, in their business, and how they live their lives. With medical advisory partners, we're all about bringing access and education of cannabis to people who don't have access to it otherwise. So whether that's the senior communities, the veterans, the, you know, minority communities, whatever it is, we're there to be that conduit into the cannabis community and really help people change lives.
Amazing. So very good. And well, you know, thank you so much, Heather. Really appreciate you. You know, thanks again for jumping on with us, and good luck for you in 2019 and beyond.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate your time today, and thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been great.
Thank you so much. We at Calican are passionate about cannabis marketing, branding, and web design. If you're a cannabis entrepreneur and you know you need an uptake in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us. Plans start at $248. Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com. That's CALACANN.com, and follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.